So again, in this session, we're going back to the compassion wing of the practice, which we started yesterday evening. So yesterday evening, we introduced that by talking about the four immeasurables briefly, and we did a loving kindness meditation, and then we discussed a little bit about loving kindness versus attachment. So this evening, I'd like to go on to the second of the four immeasurables, compassion. So we'll start with a compassion meditation, and then a little bit of discussion regarding compassion itself that you might find useful. So that's what we're going to be doing this evening. So let's launch straight into the meditation. Begin by preparing the body, of course, setting it into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. With each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen. And simply allow the mind to rest in the present moment. Focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. As with loving kindness, we cultivate compassion in stages. First, cultivating compassion for ourselves, and then slowly expanding out to others. So remember that no matter how much mental afflictions we have in our mind, underneath these mental afflictions, which are just like dirt covering the surface of our mind, is the natural purity of our mind, our Buddha nature. So imagine this inner purity of your mind in the form of a small, white, radiant sphere of light in the center of your chest, at the level of your heart. And then arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if I were free of suffering and its causes. May I be free of all suffering and mental afflictions. And then imagine your suffering and mental afflictions in the form of black smoke filling your body. And then with each in-breath, imagine drawing that black smoke into the sphere of light at your heart, completely dissolving it there. So with each in-breath, breathe in with compassion, dissolving and extinguishing your suffering and mental afflictions at your heart, dissolving it into your inner wisdom, the inner purity of your mind. Then imagine the black cloud is now completely extinguished, and now you're completely free of all suffering and mental afflictions. Now bring to mind someone close to you, a loved one, who's currently experiencing some sort of physical or mental problem or suffering. And imagine them very clearly in front of you. And arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if they are free of that problem, free of that suffering. May you be free of all suffering and its causes. And again, imagine their problem or suffering in the form of black smoke filling their body. And with each in-breath, imagine drawing that black smoke out of their body and bringing it into the sphere of light at your heart, completely dissolving it there. So with each in-breath, breathe in with compassion, dissolving and extinguishing their suffering at your heart. And then imagine the black cloud is completely extinguished. And now they're completely free of that problem, free of that suffering. And take delight in this. Next, bring to mind someone who you know quite well, but is not really a friend, but who is also experiencing some sort of problem or suffering at the moment. And again, arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if they are free of that problem, free of that suffering. May you be free of all suffering and its causes. And again, imagine their problem or suffering in the form of black smoke filling their body. And with each in-breath, drawing that black smoke out of their body into the sphere of light at your heart, completely dissolving it there. So with each in-breath, breathe in with compassion, dissolving and extinguishing their suffering at your heart. again, imagine the black cloud is completely extinguished and they're free of that problem or suffering. And rejoice in this. Now bring to mind someone who you dislike. And picture them very clearly in front of you. They are just like yourself in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. Arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if they were free of suffering and its causes. May you be free of all suffering and mental afflictions. Imagine their mental afflictions and suffering in the form of black smoke filling their body. And with each in-breath, draw in that black smoke out of their body into the sphere of light at your heart. So again, with each in-breath, breathe in with compassion, dissolving and extinguishing their mental afflictions and suffering at your heart. Then imagine the black cloud is now completely extinguished, and now they're free of all mental afflictions and suffering. And rejoice in this. Now allow your field of compassion to expand out further. And allow your mind to move around. And to whoever comes to mind, attend to them, breathing in with compassion, dissolving and extinguishing their suffering at your heart. Mind to continue to move around. Whoever comes to mind, whether it's an individual or even a group of people, breathing in with compassion, dissolving and extinguishing their suffering at your heart. matter how much darkness is drawn in, it is all extinguished without a trace. So remember, compassion is the wish for ourselves and others to be free of suffering and its causes. And as we mentioned earlier, we have what His Holiness calls biological compassion, quite naturally, meaning we're often quite compassionate to our family members and people close to us. And then as we move out from there, it becomes progressively more difficult to have compassion. And particularly once we get out to people who we actively dislike, then it's often becomes very difficult to cultivate compassion for them, even to the point of thinking they don't really deserve compassion. So why is it that we find it so difficult to have compassion for people who behave badly? And why is it also sometimes very difficult to have compassion for ourselves? And because also, you know, we suffer from this a lot of low self-esteem in the modern society. Why is that? So that's what I'd like to discuss now. And I think there's a fairly straightforward answer as to why that's the case. Now, normally, you know, if we see someone behaving badly, then The correct perspective is that we see there's a person who's doing a bad action, a harmful behaviour. So that's the correct perspective. But often when we see someone behaving badly, we often don't tend to have this perspective. Rather, what we see is there's a bad person. This, in psychology, is called cognitive fusion. We are fusing the person and their behavior together. We're fusing them, making them one thing. And cognitive means to mentally do that. So we're fusing the person and behavior together, making one thing. This, of course, is a false, invalid perspective because there are two things here. There's the person and the behavior. They're distinct. So when we do this cognitive fusion, then we're in trouble because in any given situation, we've got two choices: accept or reject. Normally, if someone's behaving badly, we reject. But if we reject and we do cognitive fusion, what we end up doing is rejecting or attacking the person. We get angry at the person. We attack the person. And then, of course, if we understand that attacking or getting angry at the person is not the right thing to do, then the only other option left to us, if we say reject is not valid, then we have to accept. But then, of course, if we accept with cognitive fusion, we end up accepting their bad behavior. So both of those options, of course, is not very constructive, not very helpful. And then, of course, when it comes to having compassion, then it becomes very difficult, even to the point where we feel they don't deserve it because they're a bad person. And trying to have compassion for a bad person or trying to forgive a bad person feels like what we're saying is, oh, what you did is okay, I don't mind. Of course we should mind. That's why we find it so difficult to have forgiveness or compassion for people who behave badly, is because we do this and somehow we feel as then forgiveness is sort of accepting their bad behavior, or having compassion for them is accepting their bad behavior. And also, of course, if we see them as a bad person, then we have a fixed, biased view of that person. Because everybody has good qualities and bad qualities. Everyone sometimes does good things and sometimes does not so good things, some bad things. But if we see them as a bad person, then they're stuck in that box of bad person. And therefore, it becomes almost impossible to see any of their good qualities, because bad people don't do good things. And if they happen to do something good, we'll say, oh, they didn't really mean to do that because they're a bad person. So, of course, the solution to this is don't do cognitive fusion, which is a false perspective. Is rather see the correct perspective. There is a person doing a bad or harmful behaviour. In that case, then, of course, we can accept the person or have compassion for the person. And at the same time, reject their bad behavior and address their bad behavior. And with compassion, help that person to overcome their bad behavior. Unfortunately, of course, in our society, we tend to have been grown up with this perspective in the way we speak and the way we think. So if we can correct that mistake, if we can think and speak in this way, then I think things will be a lot better. This is not just something we do with others, we do it with ourselves very often. If we have done a bad behaviour, often we have the perspective, I'm a bad person. And then, of course, if I'm a bad person, then often again we end up attacking ourselves, beating ourselves up. And then we end up with a fixed, biased view of ourselves. I'm a bad person, I'm hopeless, I'm no good, I can't change. And then we find it difficult to forgive ourselves because I don't deserve compassion or forgiveness because I'm a bad person. So we end up with low self-esteem. And then, of course, often we suffer a lot of guilt. And guilt is coming from this. Because if we feel guilty, what are we focusing on? We're focusing on bad me, bad me. Whereas if we have the correct perspective, then if we happen to do some bad behaviour, we can have compassion or forgiveness for ourselves and address our negative behaviour. And in that way, instead of feeling guilty, which is completely useless, it just paralyses us and makes us feel bad and doesn't even address the bad behaviour. Instead of that, here we can have regret. Because if we've done something harmful and we regret, what are we regretting? We're regretting the bad behaviour. So we can have forgiveness and compassion for ourselves, regret our bad behaviour, and work to overcome our bad behaviour. So I think this is very important, and again, unfortunately, in our modern society, we tend to think and speak in this way, which creates a lot of problems.
Why? Hmm? Where does it come from, that cognitive fusion?
Oh, I mean, I guess part of it is, part of this, I think, is that to have power over people, you know, the whole guilt thing,
yeah. You
know, you're a bad person sort of thing. Well, maybe. I think any religion, the authentic religion's not trying to do that. But of course, there's religion, and then there's people, and people. You know, so people do this. Religions don't do this. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the origins of this, but I could imagine that it's often been used as a mechanism to have some sort of power over people. Certainly, the guilt thing, which is based on this, is certainly being used over the centuries as a mechanism to have power over people. Because this, with the guilt, really paralyzes us and makes us sort of feel bad somehow. If we say bad person, understanding this, that's okay. But that's not normally what we do.
When I think somebody is bad, it doesn't mean he has been born bad, and he was a bad child, and he will be always be bad. And this is like, but if I see somebody doing bad actions, you know, always or very often, just I call him bad person for myself, and I'm trying to stay maybe far from him or something like that. It's functional.
I think it's dysfunctional because, for the reasons I explained, is that if you do this, if you put the person and their behaviour together, then what it is we don't like is their bad behaviour. But if we fuse that together with the person, then what we end up doing is we end up attacking the person.
Because it's just a quality. It's just a quality. It's like
And again, that's, you're correct. If we understand, when we say this, if we understand it's a quality or a behavior, then there's no problem. But for most people, they don't think like that. That's the problem. If when we say bad person, we know, we understand, oh, I mean person who's doing a bad action, then no problem. But what I'm saying is that that's not really how people think. Because if we did think like this, when we said bad person, you would never get angry at a person. It would be impossible to get angry at the person. You would automatically have compassion for them if you saw it like this. But we don't. We get angry at people. We don't automatically have compassion. And if they're really bad person, they don't deserve forgiveness. They don't deserve compassion. That's what many people say, don't they? Don't many people say that? He's a really bad person. He doesn't deserve my forgiveness. He doesn't deserve my compassion. That's because they're thinking like this. That's the result. So if you say he's a really bad person, and at the same time you spontaneously have compassion for him or her, fine, no problem. But the reality is that's not how people think. So yes, this is a shorthand way, instead of saying person doing bad behavior, bad person. But the implications of saying this is that we do cognitive fusion, and then we get angry at the person, we attack the person, we feel it difficult to have compassion or forgiveness for them. And if we do it to ourselves, we feel guilt, low self-esteem and self-hatred. Again, if we could say, I'm a bad person, understanding I've just done something bad, and still feel good about ourselves and compassion for ourselves, no problem. But that's not how many people do. We hear that, you know, really, a lot of people saying, oh, I'm a bad person, I don't deserve forgiveness, I don't deserve compassion, I feel really low self-esteem. That's the result. That's what happens. Maybe not in your case. If not, then wonderful. But for many people, that's the reality. That's the problem with speaking in this way. Oh, yeah, there was a question down the back, sorry.
I was just thinking that I think when, you know, sometimes we can call someone or think about someone as a bad person, and it's not really affecting ourselves, but it's happening over there. But when it's happening, you know, someone close to us, because it feels bad in me, and we have this thing about not wanting to feel that bad feeling, negative feeling, whatever, pain. So we just do this all the time, project over to just bounce it back to the other person. And I think that's really
the
ground for it.
Sure.
But what would be the criteria of this making decision? What is the bad action? What is the good action? Because for somebody, one bad action would be beneficial for other person. So how we can make it?
Sure. I mean, of course, this is a different issue than what we're talking about here, but it's a valid question, of course. And of course, from the Buddhist perspective, something, well, we don't even use the word bad in Buddhism, really, bad or good. It's more like beneficial and harmful. So, of course, when we talk about ethics and we're talking about negative behavior or negative action, we're talking about something that leads to suffering, and a virtuous one leads to happiness. Now, to know whether or not a particular action is virtuous or non-virtuous or beneficial or harmful, that's not so easy. I mean, sometimes it's obvious, but sometimes it falls in a grey area. And many of our actions fall into that group area. And then what we have to do, of course, is we have to look at the bigger picture, and we have to look in the short term and the long term. So the bigger picture, the more we can go out, the better we have a chance of evaluating whether it's beneficial or harmful. But still, of course, we make mistakes. So in any given situation, there's no book you can go to that says do this. Because every situation is unique. We have to evaluate every situation on its own merits. And then using our wisdom and compassion, we decide what to do, how to respond to that. That's all we can do. And sometimes we make a mistake, and then we learn from that and improve. I mean, that's all we can do. If we want to guarantee that we're doing the right thing, often we won't be able to do anything because we can't have that guarantee. So, again, we just use the wisdom and compassion as best we can and look at the big picture and look short-term and longer-term, and then we decide what to do. That's all we can do. We can't do more than that.
Human decisions are always very subjective.
Yeah. But, again, if we, particularly the wisdom aspect, if we use, from a Buddhist perspective, the wisdom of the interdependency, if we bring that into our process, that can really help in terms of looking at the bigger picture and so forth.
Okay. I have one more question about anger. You said that we are being angry at somebody because we think he or she is a bad person, and when somebody does something harmful to us, and we think, oh, he's a bad person, and we get angry. Mm-hmm. But if we would take, for example, a dog. If I would hit a dog, he would get angry and bite me. But he doesn't have an idea, oh, she's such a bad person, I'm just angry. It's somehow instinctive. I don't know. The dog doesn't think, Maria is bad, I will bite you.
Yes, of course.
I hit him and then he bites me.
Of course it's instinctive because we instinctively have anger. That's part of our habits.
That idea of
and so what I'm saying is that
the person is not necessary here at all.
Well, what I'm saying is that we all have the seed of anger. Some of us it's big, some of us it's very small. So for some of us, it takes something big to cause anger to come up, and for some of us, something small. But what I'm suggesting is that if, and we all have a seed of anger, if we do this, there's much higher likelihood of anger coming up. And we all have a seed of anger, and if we do this, much less likely for anger to come up. Much more likely for compassion to come up if we do this. If we do this, particularly if we do this very strongly, very high likelihood of anger arising. What's the cause of anger? Not this. The cause of anger is our habit of getting angry. That's what we often do, you know. Like if we're suffering or we get angry, we say, that person made me angry. Don't we say that? They made me angry. They're not the cause of our anger. If they were the cause of our anger, it would mean every time we saw them, we should get angry because they're the cause. What's the difference is they are a condition. They are a condition for our anger, which is already there, to manifest. So the cause of our anger is our habit of getting angry.
Yes, well, the cause is like inside.
That's right. And so we've got the cause here already. And if we do this, here comes the condition. If we do this, there's no condition for anger to come up.
Another aspect about the biting, when the dog bites the person. Maybe if we say that human is kind of biting another human, maybe you could do that without anger. Is there such an option?
Right.
So bad behavior in such kind of cruel way.
Now here, one point I want to mention is this word anger. We also have to be very careful with the word anger. Because I actually read recently a book written by a psychologist basically saying, you Buddhists got it completely wrong with anger. Because in Buddhism, it said we have to eliminate anger 100%, very destructive. And he, the book that I read, he said, you Buddhists have got it completely wrong. If you do that, you're going to have a lot of problems. A lot of problems. You won't be able to deal with like social injustice and so forth. And he's saying, what we need to do is have the right amount of anger in the right time, at the right amount. But how he's using the word anger is very different to the Buddhist definition of the word anger. In Buddhism, the word anger is basically inbuilt in the definition, is always the intention to harm. The intention to harm. Whereas what this psychologist was talking about in terms of anger necessary for social injustice, that Buddhism would call strong, wrathful compassion. Because there's no intention to harm there, there's an intention to improve that social injustice. Yeah? So this is where we need to be careful when we see this word anger. So certainly within a Buddhist context, whenever we see the word anger, you know, it doesn't, you know, often, like, for example, the classic example, some young child runs across the road without looking, and then the mother sees that, and then the mother usually doesn't go, "Oh, Johnny, please don't do that." I mean, usually the mother will use very strong language to get across to the child that it's dangerous. And then someone else is seeing that, they go, "Wow, she's really angry with him." Is that anger? No, absolutely not. Not from a Buddhist perspective. Maybe in psychology that could be called the right anger at the right amount at the right time, but then that word anger is not intention to harm. She hasn't got an intention to harm the child. She has an intention to help the child. So therefore we really need to be a little bit careful when we see that word anger, when we're discussing, particularly with people who don't understand the Buddhist way of defining that word. There was a question, yeah.
I just thought about the practical side of this anger and reactions. I think that the dangerous reactions in the world, they exist. Dangerous reactions which are harmful to human, they exist. And they have always
sure.
existed.
Sure.
And during evolution, we have developed very fast reaction which are subconscious, and you don't have time to think that this is aversion and this is his action, because you react and this is life-saving reaction.
Well, actually often it's not life-saving. If we react in this way, often with anger, if we react with these sorts of mental afflictions, often the way in which we react is not corresponding to the situation correctly. Because anger and these mental afflictions, by their nature, they distort and exaggerate what we see. So, and we know this from our own example, when we have very strong anger, we don't see things clearly, and then we later regret the things we said and did because we overreacted. So, yes, in a potential life-dangerous situation, we need to respond quickly. But we don't need anger to respond quickly. In fact, if the more anger we have in our quick response, the more likely is we're going to respond in a way that's not the most best way to avert that anger. In fact, we may avert that danger. We may make the situation worse by overreacting. So certainly within Buddhism, yes, we need to respond quickly. And so that's where in the shamatha practice, if we develop mindfulness, we can do that. And if we eliminate anger, we can respond more quickly, more effectively to better alleviate the danger or the problem. So this is what we're trying to do.
But I think when we look into nature, and let's say there is a cobra and there is a mice, and then there is a cobra and there is a rat or mice.
Sure, sure.
And this rat sees cobra.
Sure.
And it is potential danger. And,
yeah.
And then it's not time to think that, oh, this is nice cobra, but maybe...
No. We're not talking about nice. No, let's go to the humans. Let's say you're trained in the military and you're trained to in combat. If there's a life-threatening situation coming to you, are you trained to react with anger, or are you trained to remain as calm as possible to clearly see what's actually there to be able to respond in a way to save your life? Which way are you trained to respond? I think the second way. That's part of, I think, military training, is, for particularly people who are front line, is the ability to remain calm in very intense situations. That's part of the training, so that instead of reacting with anger or fear, we can remain calm and respond in a better way. So this is what I'm sort of talking about.
One last question.
Sure.
Don't you think that this problem is very much connected with the free will problem? Don't you think that this problem is very much connected...
The cognitive fusion is connected with...
Free will problem.
The what, sorry?
Goodwill.
Goodwill.
Free will.
Free
will.
Yes. Oh.
It's because when somebody does that action, if I believe he had, he was free to choose that action, and he like consciously chose to do something bad, it's kind of, I have a right to be angry. But when I, it's like natural to be angry, but when I think, oh, well, he was raised like that, and he had a lot of suffering in his life and something like that.
Okay.
He's not completely responsible for his actions.
There are a lot of conditions, then.
So his action was like a result. Maybe his bad action he did was a result of a lot of conditions.
Correct. Yeah.
And
sure. Absolutely.
When I can be so much angry, so that anger really disappears. Like,
correct. And so that's this.
One person, like something like that, but then we have to admit that we are not free at all in our choices.
Correct.
So maybe that's...
So, I mean, this is not somehow implying any sort of free will. There are many factors involved.
There are a lot of factors around that. Like this anger.
Fantastic. So that's an extension of this. If we see this and then we also think about these things, there are many factors, then it's even more easy to have compassion for them. Yes, absolutely. Of course. Okay. Let's leave it there. So that's all I wanted to talk about compassion this evening. So let's finish there this evening. So we'll just go into the Shavasana meditation, unless there's any last question there. Okay, so let's do that to finish the day. So allow your awareness to descend into your body, filling the entire space of the body. Simply becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. Using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. and relaxing all the muscles in the face, all the muscles around the eyes, soft and relaxed. And relaxing more deeply with every out-breath. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally and effortlessly, not regulating the breath in any way. And with every out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen, simply releasing them. Allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Maintaining that ongoing flow of mindfulness, of the sensations of the breath, throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. Now, for this evening's dedication, I'll begin by reading out the dedication prayer from Shantideva. You can think about the words. And then following this dedication prayer, each one of us can then do our own personal dedication silently. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.
So have a nice evening. We'll see you in the morning.